This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Let's get back to our interview with Harvey Shapiro, editor of the new anthology Poets of World War II. He's the author of several books of poems. Most of the poets included in the new anthology served in the military in World War II. Now, you fought in World War II. Were you drafted? Did you enlist?
Well, I enlisted. I was in the enlisted reserve. I would have been drafted. It was just another way of entering the service. And I went through aerial gunnery school in Yuma, Arizona, and then I went to radio operating school in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Then after my phase training, my training with the squadron and learning how to fly and fight in formation, I was put into B-17s, flew as an instructor in the States for a while with other radio gunners, and then went overseas, as I did volunteer to go overseas, and I was in the 15th Air Force, flying out of Foggia, Italy, over Germany and Austria. I flew 35 missions.
Well, I'd like to ask you to read one of your World War II poems, and this is a poem that's included in your anthology, Poets of World War II. It's a long poem, so I'll ask you to read an excerpt of it. And why don't you introduce it for us?
I wrote an early poem, Battle Report. The first poem I was pleased with when I wrote that in the 50s when I came out of the war. But then, as I got older, there were stories that I hadn't told that I wanted to tell, and they keep coming up. And these war stories are two stories that I wanted to tell, and I couldn't get them down until only recently. First begins in Foggia, Italy, where I was stationed. "These are a conquered people," said the British sergeant, putting his hand on my shoulder at the bar in Foggia, Italy. This is 1944. He was instructing me on why I should not tip the Italian barmaid as I was doing. A conquered people. I liked the phrase because it had the ring of history, suggested dynasty policy. Put the British Empire with the Roman down the long reach of time. But in the real world, it made no sense. How did it apply to the Italian kids who came to my tent each morning to trade eggs for cigarettes? Or to the old Italian lady in town who was teaching me the language? Or to the girl in the Air Force rest camp on Capri I fell in love with Christmas week? They were hardly a people, much less conquered. They were living as I lived, on the bare edge of existence, hoping to survive the interminable war. But high above their cities, on my way to Germany to kill the enemy, I was part of that sergeant's fictive world, part of the bloody story of our century. We were approaching Berlin at 23,000 feet, our usual altitude for bombing. P-38s, looking like flying catamarans, had accompanied us most of the way. Little friend from Italy. Now nearing the target, we had P-51s. We knew that when their auxiliary fuel tanks were jettisoned from their underbellies and came floating down like silver baubles, a sky full of them, enemy fighters would shortly show. A clear blue light flooded my cabin. Through my window and hatch, I could see what looked like miles of flying fortresses, the big-assed birds in their tight formations, blue all around them, followed by white contrails. Later, colored traces would connect bomber to enemy fighter, and then the black flak would spread in the sky, a deadly fungus. Planes would blossom into flame in that bewildering sky. how to believe all that happened. As in a movie, a TV drama, or some other life.
So when you look back on your experiences in the war, does it feel removed like a movie or a TV drama, or do you feel like this is something that has really shaped you and has never left you?
Both. I'm 79 now. I was 19 or 20 then. It was another life. It was somebody else who had these experiences. But they resonate in me still. Every once in a while, I can touch them and feel them quite vividly, quite palpably.
What do you find yourself thinking about the most watching the war in Iraq?
I think about what the guy's going through. I think about the fact that a lot of them are the age I was when I was going through this, when I had this experience. The technology is so different that that some of what I see is quite foreign to me, but the faces of the men and the men and women that I see are not foreign to me, and I feel very close to them.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Harvey Shapiro edited the new anthology, Poets of World War II. My guest, Edward Wong, is aviation reporter for the New York Times. This is a tough time for the airline industry. Many people are reluctant to fly because of their anxieties over the war and terrorism. Wong says passenger traffic dropped by 10% during the first week of the war, and advance booking dropped by 20% compared to the same time last year. Many flights to and from Asia have been canceled because of the respiratory virus SARS, which originated in southern China. And several major airlines are in, on the verge of, or just out of bankruptcy.
We've got two airlines in the U.S. in bankruptcy, or two fairly large ones. One is United, which I think most people know about. It had to file for bankruptcy protection in December. And recently, right after the war started, Hawaiian Airlines, which is the 12th largest carrier in the U.S., also went to bankruptcy, even after they managed to get some labor concessions. So American Airlines recently avoided going into bankruptcy this week by getting these tentative agreements from its labor unions for wage and benefit cutbacks. But a lot of analysts are saying that American might not be out of the clear yet, that the business environment is so bad for airlines right now that American could be forced to file for bankruptcy later on. It all depends on whether the environment improves and whether American's able to work out certain financial setbacks that it has.
And what about U.S. Airways?
And U.S. Airways just came out of bankruptcy on Monday. They were in bankruptcy for 8 months, and a lot of people in the industry have been fairly impressed with how Dave Siegel, the chief executive of U.S. Airways, used bankruptcy to really cut a lot of fat out of his airline fairly quickly. But again, here we're seeing a very sober, very depressed business environment, and it remains to be seen right now whether U.S. Airways will stay out of bankruptcy. They don't expect to make a profit anytime this year or next year, and that doesn't bode well for them.
I know the airlines were badly affected by September 11th and fear of flying because people were afraid of terrorism in the air. But were they in bad shape even before September 11th?
They were in bad shape before September 11th because of the downturn in the economy that started in 2001. What had happened was during the big boom era of the dot-coms, the airlines started basically doing a lot of things to their business model that didn't help it once the economy took a downswing. They added a lot of flights to the system. They started charging astronomical walk-up fares to business travelers because these internet companies would foot thousands of dollars just for someone to fly out to meetings. And they also gave very, very generous contracts to a lot of their workers because they were starting to make profits at that time. And then when the downswing in the economy took place, then all that came back to haunt the airlines. And what you're seeing now is you're seeing the airlines going to Washington to ask for some financial aid, saying that the war is really hurting them. And a lot of the legislators there are saying, well, you had these problems before the war started and before the September 11th attacks. And it's your own fault that you created this unviable business model, and we're only going to give you a nominal amount of aid. You have to go back and fix yourselves.
Well, the appropriations committees of the House and the Senate voted to give the airline industry about $3 billion in emergency assistance. Is that considered nominal aid?
I think the legislators call that nominal aid, and the airlines would definitely like more aid than that. They've been lobbying for, say, a repeal or a temporary suspension of a lot of the taxes that are levied on them. They want the government to, for example, release some oil reserves so that they can keep oil prices low. They want the government to pick up all the costs of additional security that have taken place since September 11th. And just, for example, some of picking up some of the security measures and repealing some of the taxes amount to $4 billion alone. And the House and the Senate measures both a lot about $3 billion in aid. Potentially, the airlines were hoping maybe that they would get up to, say, maybe even $10 billion as an entire industry. And that doesn't look like it's going to take place.
What makes the airline industry so special that Congress is willing to give them aid at a time when so many businesses and so many industries are suffering because of the war and because of terrorism?
I think there's a lot of factors that go into that. For one thing, the airline, right after September 11th, the federal government shut down the entire U.S. airspace for 3 days. And that really hurt the airlines a lot. And it wasn't their choice to shut down the system. It was the government that ended up imposing that shutdown on them because of the terrorist attacks. I don't think anyone's questioning the wisdom of shutting it down, but I think that the airlines had a good case for asking the government for some reimbursement for all the lost business that they were incurring then. And they were still paying a lot of operating costs on their planes and on their workers, even as they were unable to make any money during those 3 days. Also, their argument is that the terrorist attacks really hurt their industry more than most other industries because it really struck fear into travelers, and then the security costs that were being imposed on airports and on them now, those were matters of national security to prevent terrorists from, say, taking over more planes and flying them into buildings, and that these should be costs that the government should help pay instead of the airlines because it's a matter of national defense. Also, I think that the airlines often argue that they're an essential part of not only the U.S. economy, but the worldwide economy, and that if any of them were to fail or if routes were to be cut back a lot, then it would be a huge downturn for the economy. So some legislators are buying that, some aren't.
Why are the economy airlines like JetBlue and Southwest doing pretty well financially while the major airlines are in such dismal shape?
I think the model for all the low-cost carriers is Southwest Airlines, which started back in the 1970s, and they've been profitable for 30 years, which is incredible considering how unprofitable the large network carriers are. Basically, Southwest operates on a completely different business model than the large airlines. The large airlines all eventually developed these systems where they had large hubs in places like Chicago or Atlanta or San Francisco, where they would feed passengers into the hubs from all these other cities and then fly passengers back out of the hubs. That model is good for making a lot of money because passengers can fly from all over the country to the hubs, but it's bad on the cost side because of the way you have to schedule the flights in and out of the hubs and of the congestion on the runways in the hubs. It ends up costing the airlines tons of money just to operate a system like that. Now, Southwest, what they did was they started doing what's called point-to-point flying rather than using hubs, which is just sort of operating what's basically a bus system in the air, just flying airplanes from one city to the other without having these large airports where they would fly planes out to all kinds of smaller cities from there. Now, flying point-to-point is a more cost-efficient way of doing things because you can turn the planes around much faster. Southwest tries to keep their planes on the ground only 20 to 30 minutes and then turn them back around and get them back in the air. So they manage to use their planes as well as their crews a lot more each day. The other thing that has attracted people to Southwest as an airline to fly is that its fare system is much more easy to understand than the ones of the network carriers. The network carriers have this very complex fare system where the amount of money you're paying for a walk-up last-minute fare could be 5 times, 10 times what you pay if you bought that fare, say, 3 weeks in advance with a lot of restrictions on it. Southwest's fare system is much more simpler to understand because the walk-up fare is only around twice as much as the lowest fare you pay, and they only have around 4 or 5 types of fares, whereas the network carriers have dozens of types of fares. And I think any traveler who flies really feels like a lot of people feel like they're being ripped off when they get on a plane because they feel that someone on the plane paid a better fare than they did.
When you talk to airline executives, do you get the sense that they are aware and that they take seriously how really annoyed passengers are now? Annoyed not only by the lack of food on planes, but by punitive cancellation policies, bizarre pricing systems, uncomfortable seating. I mean, you know, in addition to all the security issues and terrorism, you often feel like you're being punished when you fly.
My sense is that the airlines are in a mode where they really are so desperate to just try and squeeze out whatever profits they can that the convenience of the customer is not necessarily a top priority on the list. They're thinking that as long as the customer is willing to pay some money to get between places, as long as they can pocket that money, then that's all they need to do. If they start offering the customer all kinds of luxuries like hot meals, free video, then they might not make as much money and their companies might sink. I think the luxuries that were once given to the customer, luxuries as they see it, and sort of just standard comforts as customers see it, are going to fall by the wayside.
Bankruptcy is helping the airlines trim their costs. What kind of concessions are the airlines going into bankruptcy getting from their workers?
The first thing that the airlines want from most of their workers, who throughout the industry are mostly unionized, are pay cuts and cuts in benefits. They're asking for substantial wage cuts. And then on top of that, they also want these unions to rewrite to help them rewrite the contracts so that they eliminate a lot of the inefficiencies in productivity that take place in the contracts, what are known as work rules. And the work rules are a very complex system of what workers can do and what they can't do, and how many workers need to be assigned to a given job, and how many days off the workers need after working X amount of hours. And these rules were all written up when the industry was regulated by the government, and a lot of the airline executives see these rules as hampering them in a free market environment. So they want a lot of these contracts to be scrapped, and they want them to be rewritten so they can use their workers more efficiently and get more productivity out of them.
Do a lot of the workers for the airlines, from the flight attendants to the pilots, feel like they're being unfairly squeezed by the airlines with the excuse of bankruptcy?
Yeah, a lot of the workers whom I've spoken to feel a lot of resentment against the airlines because the airlines always blame labor for their problems. It's true that around 40% of the cost of running an airline amount to labor, But at the same time, a lot of workers are saying, well, management makes all these bad business decisions. They've been running with a bad business model for years or decades. And now every time that they have a problem, they need to come to us and they're asking us to give money back to them. And so they think, a lot of people are saying that executives should go and look at the problems that they've created rather than trying to come to these unions and asking for money back.
Well, Edward Wong, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks a lot, Terry. It was my pleasure.
Edward Wong is the aviation reporter for The New York Times.